Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Playoff Podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined by J.J. Cooper.
Who has rested, I will not lie to you. I didn't make it through the end of a very thrilling... I watched that ALCS game, lost it in about the seventh, and then I woke up this morning and finished it on the DVR. So I am a bad, bad, bad fan.
I am proud to say I made it the whole way, and that's what October is all about. Team no sleep.
Middle school bus route arrives very early.
Yeah, I just have a puppy. JJ, great dramatic finish. The Red Sox, you know, we didn't podcast yesterday. The Red Sox and Astros tied 1-1. Boston goes in, takes the first two in Houston. Last night, dramatic finish. But we do need to talk about the home run that wasn't, right, if you will.
We could talk about Andrew Benintendi's catch that wins it. Great job.
And Mookie Betts is playing right field in the eighth, the spinning throw to get Tony Kemp, which
outfield
is incredible.
Outfield defense in a playoffs where bad catching defense has seemed to be kind of something that we will remember. Great outfield defense is another thing we're going to remember. Those plays, the Chris Taylor catch that he made in the 13-inning game, which would not have gone 13 innings, I don't think, if Chris Taylor doesn't make that catch.
There's been Cody Bellinger had a catch in right field that was jaw-dropping.
So there's been a lot of good outfield defense. But speaking of outfield defense, I mean, we have to start with kind of the I'll ask you first. What is your opinion on...
I'm starting first.
You're starting first. So what is your opinion on the play? I mean, if you somehow are listening to this and you haven't seen it, that is a Venn diagram that I want to see. Like, is like, oh, I don't care enough to watch even highlights of the game, but I will listen to the Baseball America podcast. You're a fan of us. We appreciate it. But you've probably seen it. Mookie Betts goes back on a Jose Altuve ball. The ball hits his glove. The glove is closed. His hand is
hit. Then it deflects a hand, comes back in. So where I'm at on this, it's difficult to state anything definitive without having that view along the wall. You know, we needed a pylon cam.
We needed a goal line, right?
And we needed the security guard out of the way.
Yes.
So for me, you know, I can understand. Yes, it looks like it might have cleared the fence, maybe from the angle that was available to us. But from a perspective, just viewpoint, you can't really tell definitively without that view along the home run wall. So for me, again, and this is where the initial call makes all the difference in the world. It's tough to overturn without that call. Well, and we see it in the NFL every single Sunday. Without that definitive, correct angle or viewpoint, you can't really overturn it. And that's where, for me, it's difficult to state yay or nay.
I feel like that it was over the wall. It should not have been interference. Now, when I say that, I feel that 60-40. However, I don't feel like anyone was jobbed here. Joe West, who... understandably and has earned many a criticism over the year, but on that play he got to the best position you could get, basically, and he watched it and he made a call. And it is a call that if we had the 360 view where you could literally spin the camera computer stitching and focus on it, it would still be a debatable play. It was that close. When you put all that together, he made the call, and yeah, I felt like it is one of those tough calls. The same thing, in essence, like a strike that calls, you know, strike three, where you look at it and it's like, okay, maybe it was actually a quarter inch off the plate, but it's close enough that either call he makes is justifiable.
The kind of like the foul ball with Jackie Bradley Jr., the camera angle that they were showing us coming in, we couldn't really see movement, but the way the umpire reacted and Bradley reacted immediately, you can hear the tick. Again, it's hard to say, oh, they blew that one. It might feel like the calls were going against the Astros, but to me, it's tough to sit here and, again, without that camera angle, I can't sit here and bang my fist on the table.
And the other thing about it, though, is that it is easy. If I was an Astro fan, I would be screaming it like, okay, that's a two-run, you know, that's the game. It's a tie game then. It's eight. But it wasn't. Like, the thing that stands out about it also is that ball did not land over the fence. And it's not the easiest thing in the world
to say. Well, kind of got deflected back in off the hand.
But my point, though, is it's not a home run to me. Like, if it had been, if you had ruled that it's not interference, I think you also very easily could have ruled that it's a double because the ball did hit Mookie Betts' glove. And then it also hit a fan's hand. And then it hit Mookie Betts' glove again. And then it landed in play. I'm not saying that that makes evidence that it didn't clear the fence. But what I am saying is it's hard for me to say for sure that that is a home run because we do know if Mookie Betts had gone up with no fan interference, gone over the fence, reached literally like he could have reached beyond and almost below the yellow line and caught the ball enough to throw it back over the fence, it's not a home run. Like, to me, like that would have been a double probably. Most, again, difficult calls all the way around, but I think it would have been a double if it hadn't been interference because the ball landed in play, it was thrown in, and if that's the case, then that does not mean that the Astros are sitting there at 8-8 at the end of the game. It may be. We don't know what would have happened after that. But it also, it's not a guarantee where you just put those two runs on the board.
And I think A.J. Hinch made a good point in postgame where he said, that's not where we lost the game. Even after that, the Astros had a lead of 4-3. They rallied back. They were up 4-3 in the fourth. They were up 5-4 in the fifth. They had two leads, and they didn't hold them. And at the end of the day, in a postseason game, especially when a controversial play happens early. Again, it's one thing if it happens in the ninth, but what happens in the second, there's always more chances.
Right.
And the Red Sox took advantage of theirs more than the Astros took advantage of theirs.
The other thing that has surprised me, because I've clearly, if you listen to these podcasts, I really thought going into this series that the Astros bullpen significantly greater than the Red Sox bullpen. And I do think over the course of the season, I think that is an undeniable fact. We have 162 games that have shown this. However, in this playoff series...
Oh, it's been a slaughter. The Red Sox have completely dominated head-to-head compared to the Astros' bullpen.
And the crazy part about this is the lone exception you could make to that is Craig Kimbrel, who is one of the greatest relievers of all time. I mean, again, you want him to have the rest of his career. But Craig Kimbrel's career so far, he has been truly among the elite of elite closers. And he's done this now for long enough that you're not saying it's a one-year fluke or anything like that. That said, right now, a Craig Kimbrel, you know, it's like watching Mitch Williams in the, you know, when he was closing out games for the Phillies, where you're like, okay, you know, anytime he comes in, it might work out, but man, it's going to be a rocky ride if you're a Red Sox fan.
You know, it's crazy watching Craig Kimbrel have this lack of fastball command. I feel like I'm watching Jorge Julio. I mean, that's the level we're talking about of fastball command just being absolutely nowhere.
Which,
Santiago Casilla with the Giants in the World Series a few years ago, remember he had a run too where he couldn't seem to get his fastball over the plate. I mean, these are not the level of relievers Craig Kimbrel's normally at.
And this is, but if you told me, the thing about this is when Craig Kimbrel's coming up, the concern about Craig Kimbrel is Craig Kimbrel walked everybody. And then he got to the big leagues, he figured it out. Now we're seeing Craig Kimbrel regress to what he was coming up through the minors. It's crazy.
I do want to say, you know, we focused on kind of the negatives, the controversies, Kimbrel. There's some great, great moments in this game. Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yes.
Has been absolutely fantastic this postseason. I tweeted out last night, he clearly got something figured out there, the final 60-some-odd games, carried it into the postseason. Benintendi's catch, you know, I always want to say our late editor-in-chief, John Manuel, he's not dead.
Yeah,
he's just no longer with us.
Our previous editor-in-chief.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, he made the comment, you know, wow, he could, you know, has there been better defensive plays to end a series? And at least in my lifetime, it's tough to think of some. You know, Pudge Rodriguez holding on at the plate as JT Snow barrels over him to win mm-hmm. the 2003 NLDS comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Uribe in Game 4 of the 2005 World Series. I mean, those were good plays. JJ, can you think of any that quite like this? I mean, that's just an incredible catch. No time to think. Instincts take over. Layout. Huge situation. I loved
it. And not only that, but you have going beyond that, it is a tough... The decision to lay out even is a tough call there.
But that's instinctual.
No, what I'm saying it is. But you say instinctual, but you play much more than I do. But every time I'm playing, every time I've ever played, you have to be thinking of game situation before the play begins.
Yes.
And if you are Andrew Benintendi, before that play begins, one of the things you have to think about is okay, what are the situations here? Clearly, if it's over my head, there's no situation where you don't, like, I mean, again, that's an easy call. You lay out for anything. But if it's in front of you, and I know that they're running, I know it's two outs, But if it's in front of you where it's going to possibly skip right in your glove where you can throw home, it is possible that you making that play will keep the tying run, and especially you'll definitely keep the winning run from scoring. Where if you lay out for it and you don't make it and it gets by you, the game is, you know, like, I mean,
oh, it's no question. It's risky. It's
so
gutsy.
So what I'm saying is yeah. that it goes even beyond that to me is that it was an incredible catch, and it was a catch where you had to basically, in the blink of an eye, make that decision. I can make this, and laying out for it is the call that I, you know, again, because I know that Andrew Benintendi is a smart player. I know he thought some step of that through that. You're right. You're absolutely, at that point, you're like, make the play. But he had already worked through his head.
Pre-pitch mental preparation, no question.
And by the way, he also said after the game that he was supposed to be like two steps back further, but where that's where his positioning was in that situation. But he thought no, and he took took a step and a half, two steps in, and that's the difference between him making that catch and not.
All around, the Red Sox, you know, they're all B outfield. I don't want to say killer bees because the Astros trademarked that.
But it's three center fielders.
I mean, Betts, Benintendi, JBJ. But, like, who would have thought JBJ would be the offensive force? Not that we ever thought
right.
Benintendi and Betts weren't good defensive outfielders. We know they
are.
But it's
a three center field outfield.
And by the way, the other B in this, Xander Bogaerts, by the way, hitting .333, had another double yesterday, two ribs. The Red Sox, the guys they need to lean on, for the most part, except for J.D. Martinez, they're performing. That's why they're up 3-1.
Go the other way, too, though. This is a great defensive outfield that
yes.
the Astros have out there as well. Again, that series has been really fun, and we have a game today that is...
Price Verlander, hashtag 2012 Tigers.
You know, which actually, I know that...
Not 2012, I'm sorry, 2014.
But I know it does feel a little bit like, okay, well, Sale, you know, okay, he's not ready, he's lost weight, all that. This is the ideal situation if you are the Red Sox to me, in that I would actually, not needing the win today, if you steal the one of Price versus Verlander, which, by the way, you are the underdog. But if you steal it, great. But if you don't, giving Chris Sale days to kind of add a little bit of weight to a frame that doesn't carry much weight as it generally is, and a rested Chris Sale is a very, very good thing. And again, even if you had a fully healthy Chris Sale versus Justin Verlander, you say, that's a 45-50-50, you know,
it's
50-50
it's a wash at best.
Whereas now, if you say, okay, you're not facing Verlander, if I say arrested Chris Sale versus Gerrit Cole, well, that feels to me more like if I'm the Red Sox, I'm like, we may actually have the advantage in this series. Gerrit Cole's a great pitcher, but Chris Sale is even better. Which takes us on to the other series.
So I want to set this up. You might see sometimes that we at Baseball America, we're opinionated, we have a lot of fun office discussions, and there are times on social media we'll go back and forth. We promise. We still love each other.
Yeah, but
it's,
no, but
it's
I,
not,
I
it's not, it's not
debate.
Social, it's not social media shade. Like, it's all in love. And in that regard, JJ and I had a public disagreement last night.
Oh, absolutely.
Night. And so JJ, I want to start with you. You know, the decision to pull Wade Miley after one batter, bring in Brandon Woodruff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just take us through your thought process there.
Okay. So let's start with the minute that the Brewers knew that they were going back to Milwaukee. The minute they knew that, they knew that Wade Miley was going to be, their plan was, is Wade Miley was going to pitch game six for them. They did not have, the crazy thing is after Gio Gonzalez had to leave very quickly, they truly at this point, they have, if you want to talk about starting type pitchers, they have Julius Chacin, who is ticketed to start game seven for them.
And as he should be.
Yes. They have Wade Miley, who's pitched really well, but so they have him. They have Brandon Woodruff, who is he a starter or not, whatever you want to call it, but the reality of it is who gives them length. You know, now length is in the Brewers world these days is four innings, but he gives them four. Okay. And then beyond that, you have your Corbin Burns, your...
Freddy Peralta, who we saw throw the other day.
Javi Guerra, who can give them more than...
Junior Guerra,
who can give them more than an inning. But, and they're trying to make seven starts. So, if you look at it and say they're taking, you know, Wade Miley out of this game, and he should start game five, and we don't know who's going to start game six, but their bullpen would be rested. I see the logic of it, but the reality is they looked at it and said, Wade Miley's our game six starter. Brandon Woodruff, in essence, is our game five starter. If that's the case, facing a Dodgers team that more than any other team in this playoffs, if you're facing the Red Sox, you just mentioned the outfield. None of them are moving.
Right. You know,
you mentioned the infield for the Red Sox. None of them.
You know who you're going to face.
If you're talking about the Astros, pretty much you know who you're going to face. To an extent, if you're facing the Brewers, you kind of know who you're going to face. Like,
Scope has played poorly
enough that you know that Travis. Yeah. So okay. So all that. But with the Dodgers, they do look at it. They want Yasiel Puig to face. They do not want to. They have pitchers they want Puig to face, and they have pitchers they don't.
Same with David Freese. Same with Max Muncy.
Max Muncy. You know, so
how they maneuver the Taylor, Hernandez, Bellinger. Yes, agreed.
So that being said, it's not going to hurt you to have Wade Miley go out there and face one batter. That whenever coaches and managers say, well, it was his throw day, this is an extent where I actually will give you that. If you tell Wade Miley before you go out there, you're facing one batter. We don't want you to basically blow it out like that. You are starting game six facing this one batter and then you're out of there. Yes, you're facing one batter. You can do that and you will be ready for game six, and I don't think it'll affect him one bit for his game six start. You are just trying to gain that advantage. And Brandon Woodruff, by the way, I know that their bullpen was taxed, but Brandon Woodruff gave them everything that they could hope to get
out of a starting pitcher. Completely
agree. If you had started Wade Miley in this game and been done with him, you could have said, we're going to go Miley Woodruff. But the problem is if you do that is I don't know who. I mean, unless you want to move Chacin up to start game six, your game six then is I don't know who's going out there. You're saying we're going to start Freddie Peralta and then we're going to go to Corbin Burns and we hope we spackle it together somehow because the back of our bullpen will be rested. They took a risk, a minor risk with this, and the reality of it is that, yes, knowing that the back of their bullpen was taxed, that's where they lost it in this game. And really, more than anything, where they lost it in this game, I would still say, is they didn't hit.
And that, for me, is something I want to start with. Mm-hmm. The reason the Brewers are going back to Milwaukee down 3-2 is not because of this decision. Mm-hmm. Whatever I say from here on out, please keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. You score 3 runs in 22 innings, you're not going to win many ball games. So I completely agree that that is why the Brewers are where they are first and foremost. So again, keep that in mind as I move forward from here with my case. For me, you have to adapt to what the situation is on the ground. When you go 13 innings the night before and you say, okay, we have no Josh Hader, we have no Corey Knebel available to us, Junior Guerra and Freddie Peralta gave us 3+ yesterday, they're pretty much down as well. Mm-hmm. We have to figure out a way to cover 9 innings. Mm-hmm. The best way to cover 9 innings with the arms available to them was to let Miley go, even if he goes 2 innings. Woodruff gives you 5, you get into the 7th, and now you're only trying to cover the back 2 innings with, again, when your options are Joaquin Soria pitching for the 3rd day in a row, Corbin Burns pitching on back-to-back days for only the third time in his entire professional career. You know, Xavier Cedeño, who has been having one job and not been doing it well. When those are your only real options, and Zach Davies, who hasn't thrown in weeks,
right?
You need to get as much as you can from your two guys. Again, I agree with the philosophy if they play 9 innings the night before and they have more arms available to them.
Even if you get 2 innings from Miley, if you go Miley, if you start him, like, so if they did that though, mm-hmm. and they lost the game, they're done.
But you got. They're down 3-2, and that's
they've got Wade Miley and Julius Chacin for the last two games and rested bullpen. They're not done.
You want to go back to Milwaukee up 3-2. I agree, they're not done.
What you're saying to do though to me is an all-in bet where you say we have to do this, and then but you're saying so how if you did.
I feel better doing that, putting in all my chips to try and win that game, and even if you don't, you go back and you say okay. Again, talking about piecing it together, that's what the Brewers have done the entire postseason. Yeah, whether it's start Chacin 3 days rest, or Peralta's now rested, Guerra's now rested, Hader's rested, Knebel's rested. Those four guys can get you 9 innings and you feel okay about it. Who knows, maybe even Zach Davies, depending on how you want to deploy him and get him warmed up, who, again, has been a starter his whole life, can give you two innings. I feel better about trying to piece together game six, having given everything we have to go up 3-2, then all of a sudden we're down 3-2. And yeah, maybe your pitching lines up better, but that one game advantage is a huge difference.
But,
you're now one game from elimination.
I think if you'd have done what you said, you would have still lost that game because they didn't hit. And now you would go into game six and seven in a situation where you say, yes, you have the back of your bullpen is rested, but you do not, there is a reality that, they believe much more in Brandon Woodruff, length from Brandon Woodruff and Wade Miley and Julius Chacin right now than they do Freddie Peralta, who's been good in the series.
Oh, agreed. And they should.
Burns, where if they lost, what they did is they crafted a scenario. They're still trying to win game five, but they crafted a scenario where they feel they are best equipped to win six and seven at home. In a way where, like, they do look at it right now, and okay, they won't have Woodruff, but pretty much everyone you mentioned there, and again, you I like how you said, maybe you get two from him. Wade Miley has pitched really well lately. It also would not surprise any of us if Wade Miley goes out there in game six, because he's Wade Miley. He's good. He's not great. And he basically, in the second inning, you're going, uh-oh, we got to get him out of here. And if that happens, they are now better equipped for that also, for that, than they would have been if they had basically gone all in Game 5. Because Woodruff is right now the only pitcher, as I see it, from Game 5 who cannot pitch in Game 6.
Agree he won't be able to pitch in Game 6, maybe Game 7.
Well, I think
we'll
you'll...
I think so. It's hard to state definitively without being Craig Counsell. I will say, though, you know, at the end of the day, we've got the team that had the most wins in Major League Baseball, up 3-1. They have a chance to close it out tonight. The defending National League champions, up 3-2, chance to close it out Friday. What do you expect to happen?
Again, I do think that somehow the Brewers, I'll stay with the Brewers, even though, I mean, obviously it'd be easy for you to switch, but I do think they're relatively well set up. They're going home, but they got a hit. But Christian Yelich is the MVP. To me, it's like a clear slam dunk. He's the MVP of
Agreed.
The National League.
Agreed.
And Christian Yelich right now is not hitting. You need Christian Yelich to hit. You need, you know, they have
you
to.
You need Jesus Aguilar to hit. You need that entire lineup to hit, and it's not.
And it's not. But, you know, and the reality is the Dodgers are pretty well set up as well because they have pretty much everyone, and I like, you know, they're set up for six and seven as well. Again, these are both series where, you know, I'm not changing my predictions because I'll just stick with them. And every one of these has been close enough. Like, again, what we're talking about in that Dodgers-Brewers series, if that ball falls and Chris Taylor doesn't catch it and the Brewers win that game, then we're talking about this right now in a situation where it's like, man, the Brewers are in great shape. It's that thin a margin.
I will say that while the Dodgers and Brewers might be the most fun to kind of armchair analyze because of all the mixing and matching and the strategizing, just watching the two series, the ALCS to me has been a much higher quality of play. You're seeing better at-bats. You're seeing a lot less wasted opportunities. You're seeing more impressive defensive plays and less defensive mistakes. And I think you're also seeing, on the whole, better pitching. Again, it's a little bit wonky.
The American League is better than the National League.
Right, and that's,
I mean, they'll win the World Series, but it's better.
And that's what I want to lead into, is I think sometimes, not that there's ever a debate, but I think it's become crystal clear the best of the American League play at a higher quality than the best of the National League.
I would definitely agree. That's a perfect way to kind of wrap this up as we, apologize we couldn't do it yesterday. The vagaries of producing an issue sometimes get in the way.
We've got an issue coming out. The American League East top 10s we're getting put together. That'll be in the next issue.
By the way, also baseballamerica.com, we put up the top 50 college draft prospects yesterday. So check that out if you're a subscriber. If you're not, it's always a great time to subscribe. You can check that out as well. But yeah, we'll be rolling out top 10s. I've just finished the Rays top 10. I've got to finish right in the 30. But, man, that Tampa Bay Rays system is a very, very good one. There are also some other good ones in the and there's some not so good ones in the – but Blue Jays is a really good system as well. Having the top prospect in baseball who's really, really good and is absolutely big league ready is never a bad thing to start a farm system.
Certainly not. Well, for JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody.